Also text us. What do you get into for breakfast? We just had a text come through here from Bruce. He wrote, I've been eating cereals for about 70 years.
Wow.
For the past 10 years, I've had rice boiled very well. Then I add sultanas. While it's still hot, then when I put it in my bowl, I add some homemade muesli and an apple cut up. So, okay, so he's eating.
It looks pretty amazing. Yeah, it looks pretty delicious.
I'm a bit more of a savory guy when it comes to my rice in the morning, but that sounds healthy, legit, delicious, nutritious, and amazing.
All right, so we have Joe here with us. And Joe, tell us a little bit about, you know, how to make the office space, you know, a bit more ergonomic. So, What do you do? Do you walk around people's offices and you just see how they are working and sitting? Do you think that people generally, they are well set up or generally not so?
Well, actually, thank you for, you know, having me here. So I think the first thing is, the workstation in today's world, sitting type of workstation, it's not really ideal for our body. God designed our body to move about and we're supposed to labor in the field. Not necessarily sitting in front of a desk. So
that's right. Because there's so much articulations. Our bodies can do so much movement. It's such a waste that we're just sitting in the same position 8 hours a day.
That's right. And you know, sitting is supposed to be a comfortable position and same as lying down. But the thing is, even if you lie down flat for the entire 12 hours of the day, you'll get sores and aches. And if you don't move at all, you can get pressure areas as well. So the general idea is that it's actually not a good idea to sit for a long time. And with the workstations in general, I find that most people tend to go for the quote-unquote comfortable positions. But again, they're probably compromising on the long-term health of their body by setting up their station in a quote-unquote comfortable position.
Okay, all right. So where do we start?
We'll probably go from the bottom up. Well, since we're all standing on the ground, and we'll probably go from bottom up.
Okay.
So when we sit at the... Well, at the workstation, at the chair. So we're looking at a 90-90 angle. So if we are comfortable in the chair, so the knees should be comfortably at 90 degrees with your feet below your knees, and also your hips should be about 90 degrees as well. And sometimes people go for a very high chair, and especially for the workers that are perhaps slightly shorter. The issue with that is if you have your feet dangling in the midair, you tend to get some thigh pains. And sometimes that can lead to numbness in the feet as well, which is not a good feeling.
Okay.
Everyone is sitting up in their chairs right now, by the way. Everyone listening to us in their car, in their chair.
All of a sudden, we are so much more conscious. Am I 90-90?
Yeah.
Self-conscious. Okay.
Yeah. So go for the 90-90. Make sure your feet are flat on the ground. And if your chair is a bit too high and unfortunately you can't get a lower chair, make sure you have a stool or a platform of some sort for your feet to, you know, get comfortable on, so that's a good thing. On the other hand, if your chair is too low, you'll find that you're almost in a squatting down position, and that can essentially compromise your hips. And around your hips, there's something called the inguinal ligament just around our groins. And when we're sitting in that low position, sometimes that inguinal ligament can press on the nerves and on the muscles coming through under it, and therefore giving us aches and pains as well, which is not very comfortable.
Okay, all right. So I'm just adjusting here my chair, so I'm feeling that my legs are in a comfortable 90-degree angle. My feet are, you know, touching the ground, but not too much. Not a lot of pressure, so, you know, my back is 90 degrees. What's the next step?
Well, the next part is our backrest. So some people go, well, what if I have the backrest, you know, going straight or going really far forward? Well, the thing is, you don't want your backrest to push you forward. It should be a neutral support, but you do want to use your backrest so that you are not overly working your back muscles, holding yourself up in the one position. A fun fact, many people think that for, say, the Royal Guards at the British palaces, and their stance or the way they stand looks really cool.
Yeah.
But in reality, for their whole body, when they stand in that position for a long time, that's actually a lot of overstraining of their back and leg muscles, which is not really designed for that kind of a work. So, again, if we're sitting in front of a computer or at a workstation with an upright back without any support, essentially we're doing the same thing.
Let me just say this. King Charles is visiting Australia tomorrow. So, King Charles, if you're listening to the show, Joe is telling you, please, can you please add some backrest support to these guards in Buckingham Palace? Because, you know, they're going to become better soldiers.
Show your men some leniency.
Maybe awesome. We can get knighted by that advice, Joe. It's Sir Joe.
Sir Joe.
Okay, so you don't want your chair to be pressing you forward.
That's right.
But you want to be in a neutral position, but you certainly want to be, reclining against it slightly at least.
Yes, yeah, slightly reclining, but not like a recliner chair. I do see some office workers tend to lean back really far and just going, well, yeah, I'm in a semi-reclined position that's comfortable. Yes, it's true that it's comfortable for your back, but we also need to look at your shoulders and your neck as well. So we are a whole body. We can't just isolate your back only or your shoulders only. You are one full person. God made you as a whole person, not just a back, not just a shoulder.
Well, that's a good point. All right. So, okay. So my back is, I think, in the right spot. What do you think, Lawson, yours? Cause, you're looking a little bit slouched, brother.
No, I was looking down, but no, do I look slouched?
A little bit. Yeah. I don't know. What do you think, Joe?
Do I need to sit up a little bit more?
Well, like, I think
this is my usual position.
Okay.
I think with Lawson's position, it's within that acceptable range.
Okay.
Yes.
So what's the next step then? We're looking at the back now and at this, the height of the chair. What should we look for next?
The next part is the height of the desk.
Ooh. Okay. That's where I think we will fail Lawson miserably here. So tell us, how do we know if we're doing the right thing here, Joe?
All right. So when we're in this comfortable sitting position in our chair setup, we want to have our arms resting on the table. And then when the arms are resting on the table, we're supposed to use our keyboard and mouse. Your elbows should be about 120 degrees, and your shoulders should not be shrugging. And I think that's the part that I do see many people tend to compromise.
I'm definitely failing. This is not 120 degrees.
No, that's more like 90 degrees.
Is this even 90?
I think that mine's 120 degrees. Yeah.
So it depends on your height. For the taller people, then,
And we got lucky here at Faith FM. They really invested in this studio here. We actually have these
moving desks,
that we can select the height. So
wait.
But what if a person doesn't...
120?
Yeah.
Just give me 1 second. 120 would be like down like this, right?
120 degrees, it's just like saying that you are, doing dishes, standing at the sink, doing dishes with your arms slightly straightening forward, that kind of a position. Yeah. That's about 120
degrees. Because 180
degrees
would be like this, 90 would be this, so
that's
it's
right.
In between.
Somewhere in between. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
You know, in between you having like, 180 degrees would be like your arms fully stretched forward, 90 degrees would be like a robot.
That's it.
And the 120 is just like in between that.
That's it.
So, Joe, all right. So what if, a lot of people, they have settled their chairs, but their desks, they're not movable desks like ours and they're not moving. So what do they do? Is there any sort of adjustment or they just should get rid of that desk and just buy a new one?
Well, what you can do is, if you have the budget, yes, you can look at buying a new desk. On the other hand, buying a new chair and raising it to a higher level to accommodate for the non-movable table, especially if this is a very expensive table sort of thing, you can do that and then put a footstool underneath your feet. And that's normally the cheaper alternative than buying a desk.
That's right. I guess you can even put like some, soy milk boxes on, maybe for a footstool if you're in a really tight budget or something.
Make sure they're solid though. Make sure they're solid.
Okay, solid. Okay, cool. Okay, footstool will be a great option, so you don't need to get rid of your desk just yet, Radio Neighbor. Okay, so 120 degrees for the arms, and then is this it?
So that's for the shoulders. Well, the thing is, if you have the arms in your 90 degrees position, you tend to overwork your shoulders, and just imagine that you're shrugging your shoulders for the entire day, you'll get sore shoulders.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Not good. And the last part I think I want to talk about is the position of the screen. It's a computer screen. And I do see that many people, including our lovely hosts here, they're using computers.
Yeah.
And the thing is, the smaller the computer, the more curl up you would be.
Yeah.
And when you're curling up, a quick pop quiz. If, say, we're looking at our head, what's the weight of our head? And any suggestions?
I would say that my head would be at least like 7 kilos.
Yeah. If he's a 7, mine's 8.
Very good estimations.
Yeah.
Actually, our head is not that heavy. It's about 5 kilos, the weight of a watermelon.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. So when you're looking down all the time, when you have a smaller device, whether it's a phone or iPad or a laptop computer, we tend to look down all the time. And especially if we have a screen that is too low, we're looking down all the time as well. And that means we're literally holding our head out forward, that 5 kilo ball forward for the entirety of the working day. And that's the thing. The weight of a head is about the weight of a watermelon. And when we go shopping at the supermarkets, we don't carry our watermelon back to our car with our hands straightening out and carrying it, you know, right in front of us. We don't want to do that because it's tiring for the arms. But the question is, why do we hold our head forward and make our neck do the hard work for the entire day? Okay. I think that's quite unfair for the neck.
So where do you want the screens then to be? Like just around like your eye level?
Yes. So for the screens, you want your eyes to be looking at the top one third of the screen so that your eyes are pretty much, yeah,
the parallel. The top one third of the screen?
Top one third of the screen. So if you have a laptop or a smaller device, what you can do is you can, if you are a bit fortunate with the wealth, you can perhaps buy a stand or a holder of some sort to prop it up. If not, the cheapest alternative in a normal office is to get a few stacks of A4 printing paper and put them under your under your screen. And
yeah, put some books.
That's right. Or books. Yeah. And if you're really rich, create a dock set up with like a 32-inch curve monitor that's like right at your eye line, and then some, you know. There's lots of
VR options. Goggles. That's
That's probably VR goggles to use Excel.
The problem with these VR goggles is just like that Apple Vision thing.
Yeah.
That was a flop.
Yeah.
And because it's heavy, so it compounds. It's adding a watermelon on top of the watermelon.
Yeah.
But the thing is, then if I use a laptop, so that means that I would probably have to get like a Bluetooth mouse / keyboard as well if I want to keep working on it, right?
That's Joe? Probably a better idea than using the laptop for the entire day. If you're only using it for every now and then, you know, half an hour every now and then, that's fine. Because again, our body is designed to move around. It will not punish us for being in one position for a short period of time. But on the other hand, it will get really uncomfortable if we stay in the very one position for the entire day. So make sure we get up and move about as well.
All right. So stay tuned because I still want to ask a question to Joe about ergonomics, particularly those pads that people use under the wrist. I want to see if it's a myth or if it's a good thing.
You're listening to the Breakfast Joe podcast on Faith FM. Positively different.
We have a guest here today, special guest. Joe, you joined us for the show today. And of course, Shell, the producer at the desk. We have received a message here from Sky in terms of breakfast. She says, well, when I remember to have breakfast, I have a third of a cup of protein oats, hot water, and a handful of blueberries. What are protein oats? Are they special oats? Protein powder mixed.
Or maybe just oats. I think oats have some protein in them, right? Like maybe
not particularly. I don't think. What do you think?
I don't know.
Okay. Well, but it sounds delicious for sure. So,
Sky, remember every day.
Remember Sky. Yes, every day. Remember, good
eat
thing.
Your breakfast.
Breakfast is important.
Is important. Yes. And if you're not super hungry when you wake up in the morning, no issue. You know, we can have it a little bit mid morning, but have something to eat to start your day. Okay. So, Joe. Please.
Yes.
Are you good with bubble quiz questions? Because you're going to be playing along with us.
Okay, he's got a pen in front of him, but he might need a piece of paper.
Okay.
Do we have any pieces
here, of paper? I have a piece of paper here.
That is a tiny. You're trying to get an advantage over Joe.
There you go. There you go, Joe.
All right. We'll try.
Okay, so we're going to I'm going to read out the quiz to you, and the person who can show me the correct answer the fastest is going to get a shout out, like yay, you're so great.
Okay. We just use it as leverage to make fun of.
That's right. The score, just to keep track here, it's 2-1, but we're not keeping track, you know, just, I don't know who's asking this anyway.
Yeah, I have no idea. All right, give it to us.
For the listeners first, the number is 0491-064-669, and the question is, of whom does the Bible say the Lord, his God, was with him and magnified him exceedingly?
Okay, I know the answer, and I wrote the answer.
Nope.
Ah, I got it wrong. Can't believe it.
The Lord was with him.
The Lord his God was with him and magnified him exceedingly.
Magnified.
Yeah.
It's an Old Testament person.
Yeah, yeah, of course. Of course. I got a few rummaging around. What did you write? No, you can't tell me.
No, I can't tell. This is the wrong answer.
Wrong.
I thought
can,
it was Joseph.
We can
Joseph.
Eliminate okay. somebody here.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I think is I know the person.
No.
I, okay, I have a second guess.
All right. Go for it. Go for it, Jay.
No.
All right.
It is nobody starting with the letter J, out. Okay? We're getting lots of...
Just think of an Old Testament character.
Is this like a multiple it. Choice at all? No.
And it's not a multiple okay. choice, but I'm giving hints.
All right.
No.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
Well, yeah, okay.
Joe,
that's
what do you
enough.
Have?
That's enough. Joe, do you have an attempt or not? So oh. the for the listeners, I'm going to do it one more time and maybe for you to judge. Of whom does the Bible say the Lord his God was with him and magnified him exceedingly? No.
Is it this?
I Man. Said nobody started with the J. It's not. No, everybody's getting it wrong. Okay, yeah. I thought okay. this... I thought this
difficult
one kind
one.
Of had a yeah, hint right. within itself. No.
Good guess, though.
Okay, so we've gotten Abraham, Nehemiah, David, Job, Joseph.
Daniel.
So all of
Is
these.
Is that Nehemiah, Job?
Can eliminate.
Abraham.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you can eliminate anybody who starts with the letter J or D. K. How's that? Okay.
Okay.
That's awesome.
What about Zed? Zerubbabel.
If you know the answer, 0491-064-669 is the number to text. And let us know. Do we have anything coming in on the text line? People are stumped. People are stumped at the moment.
That's
again,
why I'm giving so many hints.
0491-064-669.
Yeah. I think the magnified him exceedingly part is to me, would have been the one that would have given it away, but yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. As soon as I thought about that, yeah. I know what it
we
is.
We have an interesting message here from Paul. He said that there is a new book out called Alcohol, All Risk, No Benefits. And it's a very interesting book here. It's aiming to challenge the cultural myths and misconceptions that often surround the dangers of alcohol consumption. So there we go. We're going to keep an eye for this book. It looks like an interesting read here from a scientific perspective. Joe, I want to ask you this.
Okay.
Okay? So tell me about these pads that people use for their wrists. Is this a little bit too precious or is it actually... good for you.
All right. So I think in terms of evidence-based practice, there's no evidence to say that those wrist pads are going to be helpful. In clinical practice perspective, for the wrist pads, they are perhaps helpful if your desk is not in the optimal position. So if your desk is already in the optimal position, your wrist should be in that neutral state anyways. So you don't really need something to prop it up. But on the other hand, if your desk is too low and therefore you're cocking your wrist back when you are doing the typing, and yes, having the wrist pad will help your wrist to get into that neutral position. So ultimately, I think it depends on whether, number one, you are sitting at your station for a long time, and number two, whether your desk is set up at the right height.
Okay. All right. So is there any other tips that you can use? So we're going from the bottom up. We spoke about, you know, the feet, the legs, the back, you know, the head and the position of the computer, in front of your eyes. And now we're talking about the wrists as well. So is there anything that is missing for a, you know, comfortable and ergonomic workstation?
Yes, indeed. So there are actually two very important things.
Okay.
Oh.
The first thing is a good mood. So you need to have a good mood when you're working.
Oh, okay.
If you're really frightened or if you're really stressed, we actually go into a protective position. Just imagine a hedgehog in front of you. When a hedgehog is frightened, it curls into a ball.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have spikes, but we do curl into a ball as well. So that will actually bring our shoulders forward, bring our neck forward, and hunch over in general. And if we stay in that position for a long time, we're going to be in pain. And also, when we're stressed, the pain will be intensified by our brain as well, saying that, oh my God, there is a threat out there. Okay. It's going to get me. So that's not good. So especially if you're working in a very stressful office environment, that's not helpful.
Okay.
And another very important aspect is your general physical health. If you're generally fit and strong, just like saying if you have you know, really big muscles and really healthy and really strong, and then I ask you to carry, say, a 3-liter bottle of milk up a few stairs, it'll be easy, a piece of cake. But on the other hand, if I'm asking, say, someone who is, say, 5-year-old little boy and carrying a 3-liter bottle of milk and up a few stairs, that's going to be challenging.
Yeah.
So again, the stronger your body, and the fitter you are, that means your body is able to withstand the more challenging tasks, including sitting in front of a computer for a long time.
So to do regular exercise, it's actually going to be helpful for your posture overall, particularly when you were at work.
That's right.
So I have just one last question that I'm dying to ask here.
Okay.
What about these stand-up desks? They seem to be like one of the latest, you know, fads here in the
trendy thing.
The trendy thing to do, you know, for a couple of years now, you know, is it much better? Is it like, what is your, you know, opinion on that?
So with the standing desks, that's essentially, in terms of setup, that's essentially the same thing as a sitting desk, minus the chair part.
Okay.
So essentially you're following the same recommendation for the height of the desk. And this time when you're standing, you want your arms to be on the desk and then elbows at about 120 degrees and making sure that your shoulders are not shrugging, and then the screen at the same height off the top one third at your eye level as well. So that's not really change at all. In terms of your posture for your upper limbs, your shoulders, your neck, and your wrists. So essentially comparing between a sitting desk and a standing desk, you are getting almost the identical posture.
But don't you get the same thing of the guards of, you know, the Buckingham Palace, in that your back doesn't really have a support and all of the strength, all the weight is a lot of weight in your back?
Yes, so that's why I was talking about only the upper limb, so the upper part, that's essentially the same. The difference is that your legs and your back, so that's the only difference. So if we are standing in one position for a long time, and that's, of course, going to cause stress to our back and to our legs, but the good thing is I don't think most workers would stand like a guard at their desk, and they normally, you know, shift their weights around left to right, forward and backwards. Yeah, marching around a bit as well. So in that sense, that's good. But on the other hand, in terms of really the upper part, it's identical. So the ultimate consensus here is that whether we have the money to splurge around for that expensive desk, because again, I think when we are purchasing a piece of equipment, there's also the economical aspect as well. So
yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I would you say that, like, from my understanding, it's also not, like you said, not good to stand still for a long time. Like,
that's right.
Would the best method be, like, do some time standing up, do some time sitting down, walking around, just making sure you're moving? I think, like, from my understanding, what our body needs more than anything else is movement.
Yes.
To keep everything going.
That's flowing. Correct. So every hour or every half an hour, if you have the luxury to do so, make sure you get up and walk around. And then the important thing is when you're walking around, you're not just keeping your head still and looking straight ahead. And make sure you're moving your head around as well. We don't want to walk around like a robot. And yes, our legs are moving, but if our neck and shoulders are not moving, then essentially they're still holding their guard position for the duration of a quote-unquote rest, which is not really a rest for those areas of your body.
Okay.
Wow.
So there you go. So standing up or sitting down, the important thing is that both of them can be the effects of standing in that position for a long time can be mitigated, I guess, and eased by proper position, proper posture.
That's correct.
So it's up to you to choose. And Lawson, for you that wants to be in movement, you can, you know, we can ask someone to install a treadmill under your table. You can just like walk with your feet as you're, you know, sitting
down. That would be epic. We're like running on the treadmill on the air.
I actually have a friend that owns a treadmill on his desk, on her desk actually. And so she works and while she walks at the same time.
Dude, I'd be like tum, 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 tum.
Well, I don't think I don't think that she walks on the treadmill while she's typing, but like if she's on the phone call or something like that, she just goes for a walk in her, you know, treadmill
desk. That's awesome. No, I think we need one while we're on the air. Like, we're walking. Hey, guys, what's up?
Have you seen these little bicycles that people put under, you know, under the desk, like as a footstool, and then they're just like kind of pedaling?
Oh,
have you seen those, Joe?
Yes, they're actually quite commonly used for our elderly population in the community. And And from my perspective, yes, they're better than sitting still, but in reality, in terms of doing exercises, it is not the most effective form of exercise, unfortunately.
Yeah. All right. Well, there you go. You know, if you have any questions that you want to ask Joe, you know, take advantage. He's with us till the rest of the show here today. So let us know, 0491-064-669, and he can, you know, share some of his knowledge with us. Maybe one day we can talk about, you know, proper positions when you are, you know, gardening or working on a farm.
Yeah.
So, Joe, thank you very much for staying with us. Stay with us. We're going to be reading through the Gospel of John now. And, we'd love to know your perspective and what you find interesting about these texts as well.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
All right.
I'm here in John chapter 1. At the moment, and we're going to read, and we are going to get into it to see what is it that, you know, understanding this idea of the Word becoming flesh.
You're listening to The Breakfast Show. Connect with us on 0491-064-669.
All right, let's get into our Bible study today. We're looking at one of the themes, Lawson, is that one of belief and unbelief that appeared in John chapter 1. Mm-hmm. So do you remember the passages, what it said there? So it's John chapter 1, and he says here, verse 12.
Yeah, in verse 12, the Bible says, "But as many as received him, to them he gave the right to become the children of God, to those who believe in his name, who were born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God."
That's right. And in the same paragraph, he also says that Jesus came to his own, but his own did not receive him. So there's this theme here about how different people related to Jesus in different ways. So we're going to be looking into some of the places where this theme is explored further in the Gospel of John. The first passage is John chapter 3, verses 16 to 21. And the context here is that Jesus is being visited in the middle of the night by a Pharisee named Nicodemus. And Nicodemus, obviously, he's visiting Jesus in the night because he doesn't want to be caught, you know, having conversations with Jesus. Mm-hmm. And they're having this amazing conversation. And Jesus has a striking teaching here in this passage. Let's just, maybe, Joe, would you be able to read for us from verse 16 to 21?
Sure. Verse 16. "For God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish but have eternal life. For God did not send his Son into the world to condemn the world, but to save the world through him. Whoever believes in him is not condemned, but whoever does not believe stands condemned already, because they have not believed in the name of God's one and only Son. This is the verdict. Light has come into the world, but people loved darkness instead of light, because their deeds were evil. Everyone who does evil hates the light and will not come into the light for fear that their deeds will be exposed. But whoever lives by the truth comes into the light, so that it may be seen plainly that what they have done has been done in the sight of God."
Wow. Okay, let's pause here. Let me just, there's so much here already in that, you know, small segment that we can explore. But first thing, gentlemen, I want to ask, starting with you, Lawson, then we go to Joe, what sort of what passage here just like strikes your attention from the get-go?
Yeah, well, verse 16, a classic, the single most well-known verse in the Bible here. You know, "For God so loved the world that he gave his only Son, that everyone who believes will not perish, but will have eternal life." So it seems here there is a condition, to receiving eternal life. Firstly, God sent his Son, and based on this, the condition is then to believe. If you believe, you will not perish but have eternal life.
Okay, but let's just pause here. Okay, so are you just saying here, Lawson, that if you just believe that God exists or that he sent Jesus, this is enough?
Well, I think the rest of the passage contextualizes what it looks like, or demonstrates, I should say, like what it looks like to believe. It gives some ideas and some understanding on belief, because it's actually, you know, Jesus, Paul, the Bible, that makes it clear that belief in an intellectual assent that God is real isn't quite enough to receive salvation.
Yeah, and there's a passage here that I think, speaks to that. I don't know if you know this passage, Joe, but this is an interesting one for me. It's James chapter 2, verse 19.
This is a classic. This classic, is a banger. Yeah.
It says here, you believe that there is one God? You do well. Even the demons believe.
Yeah.
And tremble.
Yeah.
But do you want to know, O foolish man, that faith without works is dead?
Yeah.
So I would say people ask, okay, well, all you have to do is believe. I would say, yeah, all you have to do is believe. However, define belief. Belief is not just intellectual assent, as a lot of people want to see. The demons also believe, and they don't quite cut it.
Yeah.
The thing is, belief equals to, yes, the intellectual assent part, plus the action that follows that faith.
Important point about that passage as well. It says the demons believe and tremble. Not only do they believe that God is real, but they also believe that Jesus has power. Like and we see this a number of times.
Yeah, and they respect that power to a certain extent.
Respect it. They fear it.
They fear it.
Yeah. Jesus, to Legion, you know, the demon that they find there on the other side of the Sea of Galilee, is like, we are Legion. You know, what do you have to do with us, Son of the Most High God? Like, they know and understand exactly who Jesus is, exactly what his power is, exactly what his status is, and have much more fear and reverence and respect than many humans do. But yet, like, they're demons, they're, you know, fallen angels because of their works, essentially. Because, you know, through their works, what do they reflect? That they understand who Jesus is, they don't believe him in the sense that they don't love him, they don't have him as a part of their life.
And what about you, Joe? What do you reckon about this conversation or anything in that John 3 passage that we read? Anything that speaks to you that you find interesting?
Yes. To me, I think it's verse 19 and 20. So it says, light has come into the world, but people love darkness instead of light because their deeds were evil. Everyone who does evil hates the light and will not come into the light. I fear that they're
okay. So, explain to us unpack to us a little bit more. So, what sort of how do you understand what's going on here? What's saying?
Well, I think we put our standards sometimes, if not many of the times, most of the times, beyond God's standards. We think we want to be right rather than being right. We just want to be right. And I think that is also related to Matthew 5 verse 37. All you need to say is simply yes or no. Anything beyond this comes from the evil one. So I do realize that many of the times that we have a lot of conditional statements, yes, but, no, but, rather than yes, I have done something wrong, or no, I uphold my belief.
Yeah.
So I think that's a distraction.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
And that's the darkness that we sometimes unconditionally...
We try to justify our lack of belief sometimes, kind of like putting it on the you know, God's account.
Yeah.
Really.
I love, particularly in verse 19, this is some of my favorite words in the Bible here. In verse 19, it starts off, it says, and this is the judgment. I'm reading here from the NASB. The reason it starts off by saying this is that, like, from the previous verses, what it says is that Jesus has come to save everyone, not to condemn and not to judge. It's like, you know, the reason Jesus has come to this earth is to save everyone. But what Jesus is speaking to here is that he is identifying the fact that there will still be people lost. And the question is, wait, if Jesus came to save everyone through his death, then how is it that people can be lost? Mm-hmm. Like, if you read these first three verses here, it's, and I think this is, you know, the likes of, say, universalist, the people who come to with an interpretation of the Bible that
everybody will be saved.
Everyone will be saved. No one will be lost. They read, like, just verse 16 or just verse 16 and 17. And they're like, yeah, see, Jesus doesn't judge anyone. All Jesus does is save people. But Jesus makes this point here. He says, yes, I have come to this earth. My sole purpose is to save people, not to condemn them. But it says, and this is the judgment, or I like reading in New King James, but this is the condemnation. This is how people can be lost, that the light has come into the world and people love darkness rather than light. For their deeds were evil. Judgment Whether you end up in heaven or you don't end up in heaven, Jesus has made every single provision for you to be saved. He has died for you. He's given you the Holy Spirit. He's given you light and illumination through his word. Like, he has made all those steps. And what he's essentially saying here is, I will do everything in my power that I possibly can to save you. The only thing that can keep you from that is your love for darkness, your choice to look at darkness and to go towards darkness rather than light.
Yeah, I love that. That's a good point.
I think this teaching is so freeing. I think a lot of people are wrapped up in guilt, in the guilt of their actions, the guilt of their struggles. They feel like, oh, Jesus has condemned me and he won't accept me anymore, you know, if they've fallen or whatever it may be. And what Jesus is saying here is like, no, I only came to save you. Yeah. I did not come to condemn you. I only came to save you. The only way that you can be condemned is through yourself. Like,
if you'd rather love darkness more than you love light.
Yeah.
If you really love it and you are embracing it and you're despising the truth and you don't want to hear the truth, that's where we should be concerned.
Absolutely. He does everything he possibly can for us, but then furthermore, he leaves the ball in our court. Hey, let's make a decision today.
You're listening to the Breakfast Show podcast on Faith FM. Positively different.
We have Joe, you here with us as a guest talking to us and studying about with us, and of course, Shell, the producer at the desk. We want to know, okay, let's go into the next quiz question and the answer to the quiz question, because nobody seemed to get this one right. Not even us, and I don't think not
Made
even our radio
too
neighbors.
Hard.
Yeah, well, it's a bit too hard. Okay,
it's
so what was
hard trying to find that balance between the too easy and the too hard? Because you've got some people who are like, eh, that's too easy, I don't want to answer it. And then some that like the challenge of hard, but then you can go too extreme, and so
that's right. So who was the person?
Find questions for everybody. Lawson, you tell us who is the answer person.
The answer was Solomon. No, I found it. After many guesses,
he deduced it after really, really taking some time to think it through.
Yeah, when she said magnify you greatly, I just started thinking politically and, you know, about his kingdom and whatnot. So it's
but let me tell you this about that passage as well. It said magnified greatly, right?
Yeah. Exceedingly, yep.
Exceedingly.
Yep.
So what passage is that, Lawson? Do you know?
Oh, I don't know.
You know the reference?
The reference, I have no idea. Ooh.
You know the reference there?
I did have it before, but no, I don't have it now. Yeah, but I can get it for you after.
Gary, and this is the thing I found that with these ones that are specific verses, it depends on the translation that you're reading.
Yeah.
Because I'm wondering here if in the NASB.
I look at all of the different versions. It's pretty easy to compare.
I haven't read the entire Bible in every. Actually, some people say that each year they read in a different translation, and I like that, but I haven't done that.
Are you trying to say that you would have got the question correct if it was?
No, I'll say that it would be impossible for me to get that particular question correct.
Okay.
Yeah, but maybe not.
Shell, next question.
Next question. All right. So last Friday we had a question about Aguirre's prayer, I think it was. So, and it just made me think about Jarvis's. So this time we're going to have one about Aguirre. So where in the Bible do we find Aguirre's prayer for godliness and contentment? It's my favorite prayer in the whole Bible.
Oh, really?
Do you want me to read?
How do you spell Aguirre?
A-G-U-R.
Aguirre. Okay.
You're looking for the book of the Bible.
I just want the book of the Bible. That's right. Okay. Do you want me to read you the prayer? Because it's so
read the prayer.
Read the prayer. Okay.
Two things I ask of you. Deny them not to me before I die. Remove far from me falsehood and lying. Give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with the food that is needful for me, lest I be full and deny you and say, who is the Lord? Or lest I be poor and steal and profane the name of God.
Yeah, I love that.
What was the reference for that?
One. Yeah. Oh. Okay, Scaffy.
Oh,
Scaffy's right.
Okay,
got
let's see if Joe got it.
Okay, this is Joe's answer.
Nope.
No, not quite. I'm going to write, I'm going to write this. Is it this one?
No.
Oh, man.
Okay, one out of three have gotten it correct here, so your chances are probably around the same, everybody. The number is 0491-064669. It's such a beautiful prayer about just trying to make sure that he's balanced and that God's not giving him either too much or too little so that he will be able to stay on the straight.
Yeah, love it.
Yeah.
Should we give an extra tip?
You can.
Yeah, okay. Look, this is the tip that I'm going to give. This is a prayer that carries a lot of wisdom. So you might want to look into the wisdom books of the Bible. Oh, come on, Shao. There's a whole bunch of them.
Might be a little big of a clue, but we'll
okay,
see.
Well, let's see. Let's see if people can get it. Lasso didn't get it. Even after it's okay. We're good. We're good. All right.
Okay. Yeah, he got it.
Third time lucky. Fantastic.
All right, everybody. So send through your answers to 0491-064-669. We'd love to hear from you.
Okay. Very good. All right. So let's go. Michael sent us a message here. Hey, I thought that the King James Version was the original English translated version, the 1611 Textus Receptus.
That's right.
Okay. So is the King James Version the original translated version?
It's actually the one that Paul read.
The Paul the Apostle just like traveled in time. And
just kidding.
I don't think that was actually the first ever English translation, though.
It was Wycliffe.
Wycliffe was the first translation in really, really old English, so old that we could probably not even, you know, read it. The 1611, though, was commissioned by King James.
Yeah.
And it's a very good translation. The thing about Textus Receptus is that it was the best manuscript that we had in the 1600s. It's no longer the best manuscript that we have. What?
Canceled.
Well, it was. It was. And it's still a very, very good manuscript. It's just not the best one that there is available. You know, in these 500 years, we have found earlier manuscripts and so on. So from a critical textual perspective.
We're going to have to do like a whole apologetics thing here.
KJV. Look, I think it's amazing. Yeah. This is the thing. This is my thing. Some people are KJV only people. Yeah.
No, specifically KJV 1611 only. None of these updates, none of these creature comforts 1611.
Yeah, but look, it's a translation. It's a good translation. It's any translation. And so I'm not so strict when it comes to KJV only or New King James. You know, I personally, as I mentioned to you, I'm a New American Standard Bible person. I really like it. I think it's more loyal to the text than the KJV is. But a KJV is very beautiful. It has poetic tones to it. Even the 1611 one.
I got sent an article once. It was actually from Shell's son. I got sent an article, and it was called "The Top Three Worst Bible Translations." Do you know what they are?
Worst.
The top three worst Bible translations.
I can have a guess.
Okay, go for it.
Number one is the one that you don't read.
Oh yeah. Okay, you've read this article too.
I don't read, but you've read it.
It makes sense.
What is the two and three?
It's like the one that you don't read, the one that you don't follow, and the one that you don't listen to. Something like that. It's like, hey, the worst version of the Bible. Like, I think there are some objectively bad actual translations of the Bible, but the worst thing that you can do for yourself is just not read it.
Yeah.
If you're like looking for doctrinal truths on things, you can be misled by certain certain versions.
Certain versions, yeah. So the good thing is when you're studying the doctrines, the thing that I would say is like try to get to as a literal translation as you possibly can. They're probably in the family of literacy. This is why I like the NASB. In the scale of literacy, literality is the highest in terms of accuracy. So ESV is a very good one. King James, New King James, they are tried and trusted ones. When it comes to the more what it's called dynamic or modern translations.
Yeah.
And this is the New Living Translation, the New International Version. That's when the authors, they take more liberty in translating things, and interpreting them for you. And this is where I think that if you're using these ones to study doctrines, well, check on them, but check the others ones as well.
And some are better than others in those dynamic translations. I'd say I really don't like the NIV versus I'm pretty partial to the NLT. I've given Bible studies from the CEV because it's very easy to read the contemporary English, version. So there's some that I'm more partial to than others in that family of dynamic translations, you know, the ones that are a little bit less literal and real to the text, just because some of them are better. And then there's like ones like the Message, which like the reason I don't like the Message, I know, and this is, you know, whole conversation about the Message we could have, but the one reason that I like, the one that gets me is how they translate the book of Revelation and verse 10, where it's like, in the Lord's day, I went into vision, and they, and the translator just writes, on Sunday, I went into vision.
Oh, if you go to some new international versions.
Yeah.
And look, let me tell you this. I don't think that the new international, a lot of people have lots of issues with the new NIV.
Yeah.
I have some issues, not a lot of issues. I think that they do a good work in translating the Pauline epistles.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, a really good work. However, I think when you go to Daniel, particularly in the time prophecies, there are some slips there. And particularly when you go to the book of Revelation,
yeah,
it has some footnotes. Some of them have, I have seen some footnotes saying, you know, I was caught in the spirit in the Lord's day. And then the footnote says, there is the Sunday.
It's the like, Sunday.
Where are you getting that from?
What? Yeah. Like,
where is that in the text?
Yeah.
So that, so yeah, but the more on the modern translation you get, the more readable it gets, but then the more interpretation you get from the authors.
What's it like? Do you have Michael read the Bible?
Michael said, hey, thank you for clearing that up. Thank you about the King James. Yeah. And he said, hey, what about the New World Translation of the Holy Scriptures? JW version.
Yeah.
I think he said,
have you read the New World mistakes before?
Yeah, I have a New World. My home. Yeah. I asked some of the Jehovah's Witnesses that were knocking on my door if I could have one. And I do. The thing of that translation is that, number one, nobody knows who are the translators because they don't identify themselves.
Wow.
Because so we don't know their credibility, we don't know their credentials, they cannot be held accountable for the translation.
Yeah.
And the second thing is that you can see that there's a lot of things in brackets, and it just so happens things that are they're giving interpretations of that matches with their with their own doctrine's interpretations.
Yeah. Do you ever read the Bible in Chinese, Joe?
Yes, I do. I actually have normally both the English New King James Version and the Chinese Contemporary Bible Simplified Version side by side when I read it. It's interesting that, unfortunately, there are a few, there are only very few versions of the Bible in Chinese. Mm-hmm. Some of them were actually made during the imperial times more than 150 years ago.
So they're difficult to read for the modern Chinese reader?
So, for the very old versions, yes, it's very difficult because it was written in the old written Chinese rather than the contemporary spoken Chinese, which is difficult. And also there are other versions of the Chinese Bibles that don't really give you sometimes even a full translation of the entire book. And they sometimes make changes to verses and adding in things or omitting things.
Yeah, we've talked about.
So this translation, what is it called? The contemporary?
Yeah, so the Chinese one that I use is called Chinese Contemporary Bible.
Contemporary Bible Simplified. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Good? Like when you read the ones that these two side by side, you being a native, you know, Chinese is a native language to you. So does it feel accurate?
Yeah, I would say 95% to 98% accurate comparing to New King James Version.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. Dude, so if you have work.
Yeah. You need a Chinese
contemporary Bible.
Yeah, there you go. Don't use, we were talking about a translation of the Chinese Bible that like changes the stories completely because it's like a CCP translation. It's a bit interesting.
Yes.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. And Jesus went and stoned the adulterous woman. Yeah.
Stoned the woman caught in adultery.
Thou shalt not hold Western ideologies.
You're listening to the Breakfast Show podcast on Faith FM. Positively different.
Let's give away the answer to the quiz question here. So the prayer of Agur.
It was in the book of Proverbs.
Proverbs, yes. When you said Agur, it's like, oh, what? Where was Agur again? I don't remember that person. And then when you said a prayer, it's like, okay, that's in Proverbs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Beautiful prayer of contentment. And there's a number of psalms that talk about contentment. One of my favorite ones, I forgot the number, but it's the one that says, Lord, my heart is not haughty, nor my eyes lofty, nor do I exercise myself in things that are too great for me.
Mm.
So we
have a good version of that by Ron and Patty.
Oh, really? Okay. Well,
can't play it today.
Let's play it tomorrow maybe. But I love this psalm because sometimes you're frustrated because things are not going exactly what your way. And this psalm just remembers, hey, you know what? The most important thing for you to be content on is to be a child of God. If you have that sorted out in your life, the rest is a detail.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just like as simple as that. The rest is a detail. Failures, successes, they're all absolutely minor in the great scheme of things. The only true success in life is to be called a child of God and to receive salvation by Jesus. And the rest will take care of itself.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Joe, what about... So, thank you for participating in the show today. Do you have any, you know, moments here, any sort of a lessons or any sort of a moments that you want to take away with you that you enjoyed the most or
well,
you want to share?
I think first thing, thank you very much for having me here at the radio. I think in terms of the take home or take home things, you know, I think the most important part is knowing that God is always there and he will show us the way disregard the challenging situations. I was made in China, like the many things that are made in China. And you know, I thank God that he could lead me out of China to see the world that he created, that I'm not going to have to go through essentially what others tell me, but to see the world he created with my own eyes. So I think that's Amen. Brilliant. So
we should invite Joe to come here to share his journey with us. Yeah, one of these days.
That's powerful, Joe. Yeah, and I feel, Joe, what you're saying is incredibly on theme. We've been talking about Jesus, you know, being the light of the world, making it clear to us, coming into the world, and we can either love darkness and stay where we are, and not maybe, I'm not just talking about geographically, although you're reflecting very geographically, but I think you're also reflecting in a sense of personal, you know, philosophy as well, that, you know, you can just be in darkness, or you can see the light and follow where Jesus
lives. That's right. And it's very interesting because, to accept the light of Jesus always carries his risks with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And some people have higher risks that I have to pay for than others. It's true.
Yes, unfortunately.
Yes, unfortunately. But in every single case, it's worth it. And this is the thing. Yeah. There's not one case where Jesus would say, yeah, look, in your case, I think it's better for you not to believe in me. Mm. That situation just does not exist. Mm. And that's amazing.
I heard recently someone talking about Didymus in the Bible. The character Didymus. Not Thomas.
There's another Didymus?
There's another Didymus.
Okay.
Who Paul refers to very often.
Okay.
And like in his writings, like, hey, Didymus and Silas and Luke greet you. And they were, you know, this person was preaching, at a Lakeside church. Shout out. They were preaching about Didymus and eventually in, I believe it's in Timothy. So towards the end of Paul's life, like up until this point, he's been throwing Didymus's name in, you know, in some of the greetings and some of the salutations in his book. And towards the end, it's like, hey, you know, and when Paul's in his most desperate times, he's like, hey, Didymus has abandoned us. He's basically said, like, Didymus, who you've, you know, seen in these introductions to these letters, just as a disciple who's a part of my company. He's abandoned us. He's like no longer walking with the faith. And it's like a really, like, it'd be really interesting to hear his story and hear his testimony, like, of how essentially, like, do you think Didymus was better off for letting go of the faith because things got tough? And I think that on Judgment Day, we'll know where Didymus is at, and I think he'll testify to whether that was a good decision or not. And I think that we should be encouraged and say, hey, like, you know, Paul reflects on his own life and he says, hey, despite all these issues and difficulties, like running the race, walking with Jesus and making it to the end is the greatest thing that I could possibly have done with my time.
Those who persevere till the end will be saved. This is it, everyone. And thank you for listening. And tomorrow we will have more content for you here on Faith FM Live at 6:30 a.m. Talk faith, live faith, and act faith.
God be with you till we meet again. God be with you till we meet again.
Thanks for being a part of the Faith FM family. Join our community on Facebook or get in touch at 1-800-FAITH-FM.